I call this meeting of the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. I'm going to ask for a little deference from the committee. Grace Johnson, our legislative assistant, is filling in for today. And so this is her first time doing the committee, and I believe it's Mr. Strohmeyer's first time at facilitating virtual testimony. So we may have some glitches. Just be aware, and hopefully everything will work out. Representative Frederick, would you like to move the minutes for March 17th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Frederick moves the minutes for March 17th, 2025. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. First up, we have House File 44 by Representative Curran. Food manufacturers and brand owners required to report orthophthalate testing results of packaged food products to the Commissioner of Agriculture. We estimate this will take about half an hour. Representative Curran, please proceed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. House File 44 before us today.
I will move House File 44 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you, Chair. And we do have an amendment. Do we want to do the amendment first?
Sure.
Okay.
Representative, I will move the A1 author's amendment. Representative Curran, could you please explain the amendment briefly?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So the A1 amendment today significantly reduces the expense of this bill. When we got the fiscal note back, we realized that it was quite hefty, and that's not what we were looking for. Our goal with this bill is just to address a health and safety issue that we know exists, and to try to do that in the simplest way that we can. And so the amendment deletes the requirement to report results to MDA. And I ask for your support.
All those in favor of the author's A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape they would like, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Ayes have it. The A1 amendment is adopted.
Thank you again, Chair and committee members. I will be very brief in my introduction. Again, House File 44 is a bill to address orthophthalates, which are chemicals that are plasticizers. There are substances that are added to plastic to make it flexible and durable. And orthophthalates are found in food packaging, in toys, in a variety of different products. And our testifiers will do a wonderful job of going over that, and I would love to turn it over to them.
First up, Lori Ullinger, Coalition of Plastic Reduction. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Chair Hansen and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify for this bill, and thank you to Representative Curran for authoring it. My name is Lori Ullinger, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition for Plastic Reduction in support of HF 44. I think this is an important bill to shed light on something that most people and most food manufacturers are not aware of. Consumer reports uncover the fact that phthalates are leaching into our food from plastic. Some who are opposed to this bill suggest that a voluntary phase-out would be better, but if a company wanted to do that, what's the first thing they would do? They would run tests to see if phthalates are in their food. And if they started making changes to eliminate them, they would run more tests to see if it was working. In talking to someone who worked at a local cereal company, I learned that food manufacturers do testing all the time, not just when they develop a new product. They test to make sure they meet safety requirements, nutrition promises, pesticide residue, and to ensure that a batch turned out okay. What we're asking for with this bill is a bare minimum. We want food manufacturers to do a phthalate test once every 2 years and to make the results public. One mother asked me about Cheerios after hearing about the Consumer Reports results. She said she was concerned about giving them to her toddler and wondered what would be a better option. I really didn't have an answer, but I think this bill would provide what she would need. We're not trying to limit choices for consumers. They want to know, and they have the right to know what's in the food they buy. Phthalates are toxic chemicals associated with serious health impacts. The Minnesota Department of Health listed 17 phthalates on the chemicals of high concern list and 3 on the priority chemical list. If a developing fetus is exposed to phthalates at just the wrong moment, it can have lifelong health impacts. This bill would provide food manufacturers with valuable information so that they can begin to eliminate phthalates from their products. and making the results public will give consumers the tools they need to make safer choices for their families. I hope you'll support HF 44. Thank you.
And we'll do questions at the end of all the testifiers. So next up, Hannah Residence Olson, Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Hannah Resendez Olson, and I am a lifelong resident of Minnesota. I am a Climate and Health Equity Leaders Fellow with Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate, a community health specialist for a local public health department, and a proud alum of St. Catherine University's Master of Public Health program. I am testifying in support of HF 44. This bill will require food manufacturers to test their products for phthalates and publish the results. As a health professional, I am deeply concerned about the impacts of plasticizers and phthalates in our food. I support HF 44 as an essential bill to help protect consumers from harmful plasticizers, which are known to disrupt the endocrine system and lead to adverse health effects. Healthy Kids Minnesota, a biomonitoring program campaign of the Minnesota Department of Health, has published notices on the health impacts of phthalates on children. Endocrine disrupting chemicals affect the body's natural hormones, and while this can be harmful at all ages, it can be most harmful during development for infants and children. This is why some phthalates are already banned for use in children's products. This disruption to the endocrine system can lead to death and disease, including cancer, heart disease, diabetes, reproductive and neurological disorders, and compromised immune functioning. We are not only exposed to endocrine-disrupting chemicals through cosmetic and personal care products, but we are consuming them directly in the food that we eat. Minnesotans deserve to know what is in their food. There is no safe level of plasticizers in food, yet we are unknowingly and frequently exposed. Widespread use of plastics threatens the planet and all who inhabit it. Plastic use is directly related to climate change, with 98% of chemicals used in plastic production derived from fossil fuels, which accounts for nearly 4% of greenhouse gas emissions. In order to protect the lives of our dear neighbors, we must ensure transparency from food producers and allow them the opportunity to protect consumers in order to build trust and promote health for all who call Minnesota home. Thank you.
Next up, Ivana Stark, Clean Water Action. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Hansen and members of the committee, I'm Ivana Stark, State Director of Clean Water Action Minnesota. I'm here on behalf of our members in support of House File 44, and we are grateful to Representative Curran for carrying this bill. None of us would knowingly give our children plastic to eat. We would never hand them a roll of saran wrap or a handful of plastic chunks to nibble on when their little tummies rumble. Or do we? You see, some of our kiddos' favorite snacks, snacks that even some of us grew up on, like Cheerios, are full of plasticizers called phthalates. These chemicals leach out of plastic packaging and negatively impact the food we drink and our food and drink. This bill comes from a Consumer Reports testing of 85 food products. They found the highest levels in General Mills made Annie's Organic Cheesy Ravioli, my niece's favorite, Cheerios, my three-year-old's favorite, Yoplait, Green Giant, and Progressive brands. There is now a lawsuit against General Mills due to this contamination. When these chemicals enter the body, they impact it in a variety of negative ways, as we just heard. By testing products and reporting the findings online, consumers are able to understand what they're buying and what they're eating and feeding their families. Minnesotans deserve to know what is lurking in the products they buy. Manufacturers should also be aware of what they're producing and selling. This bill will not only protect Minnesota families from toxic repercussions of exposure to phthalates, but it will also protect the confidence in our food supply. Our food supply, human health, and water quality is being hit from every angle. PFAS, nitrates, phthalates, microplastics, the list goes on. We must demand better from our food manufacturers and take steps such as supporting House File 44 to protect the food that we eat and our cute little kiddos. Thank you.
Thank you. Darren Broughton, Minnesota Agri-Growth Council. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Mr. Chair, Darren Broughton, Executive Director of Minnesota Agri-Growth. We are a coalition of more than 150 food and agriculture groups across the great state of Minnesota committed to advancing Food and Agriculture. I want to thank you, say thank you to Representative Kieran for bringing forward an important topic of phthalates in our food. Every family wants to make sure that the food on their table and the food in their fridge and pantry is safe. And that's why the food industry has eliminated most uses of phthalates in food packaging. Unfortunately, House File 44 in its current form is unworkable for four reasons. First, we must lead and follow the science and data. While the European Commission and China have each determined separate health limits or concentration levels for phthalates, there is no health-based value for phthalates in food in Minnesota or in the United States. Sharing phthalate concentrations in food products without clearly defined scientific health values puts every food company at risk of misinformation campaigns or legal challenges. In an era of misinformation and fake news, it is essential that Minnesota acts responsibly. Second, the Obama, Biden, and Trump administrations have been reevaluating phthalate regulations. In May of 2022, the FDA removed 23 phthalates from the use in food packaging. In September of 2022, the FDA started a process to review new toxicology and scientific information in the remaining 9 phthalates used in food. The FDA is still reviewing the nearly 24,000 comments and scientific data submitted, and it's important that we let the federal process continue. Third, Minnesota is home to more than 700 food brands and is an entrepreneurial food hub. Some of the state's and best food sensations like Boom Chicka Pop, Northland Lefse, and Johnny Pops may not have ever started here if House File 44 was in effect. An unintended consequence is empty grocer and retail shelves as small food companies will bypass Minnesota. The current bill does not support food entrepreneurs and could turn our food hub into a deserted island. Lastly, House File 44 does not reduce phthalates in our food systems, which is an important piece. We need to better understand where the phthalates are coming from, whether that is the packaging, the processing, or somewhere else. We need to address the real problem and not create new ones. That's why Minnesota AgriGrowth is committed to working with Representative Kieran and others to continue to make meaningful progress to ensure our food system remains safe and secure. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrew Morley, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee.
Representative Curran, Chair Hansen, and Republican Lead Anderson. My name is Andrew Morley, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Our membership includes more than 6,300 businesses of all sizes from every industry across the state, along with over 500,000 employees. Thank you for the chance to provide input on HF 44, legislation that creates new reporting and labeling requirements on products manufactured or sold in Minnesota. The Chamber and its members are committed to ensuring that foods offered to the consumer are accessible and safe. The labeling and testing requirements in HF 44 do not fit with our modern food supply chains. Orthophthalates, the compound that is the focus of this legislation, were once key components in wide-ranging applications, including in food packaging. Phthalates made plastics flexible, durable, and workable in manufacturing settings. As cost-effective replacements have come to market, phthalates have largely been replaced by alternatives in direct food packaging. Yet the bill before us today creates another pair of mandates on businesses that address compounds, which for the most part are no longer in use. Unfortunately, both requirements are unworkable as written. Testing every packaged food product would be a massive undertaking and creates more questions than answers at this time. One concern is whether there is enough laboratory capacity to handle such an influx in testing. Another is a potential uptick in litigation with such broad mandates. Lastly, testing and labeling does not necessarily indicate a source. For example, trace amounts of phthalates may have come into contact with the product due to a supply chain conveyor belt, a glove worn by a worker at the line, or one of any other seemingly infinite possibilities, indicating they were not intentionally added to the product. Which begs the question, how can we better address the source as manufacturing with phthalates continues to diminish? While we appreciate the A1 amendment that clarifies intent, cuts provisions regarding details of labeling, noticing the Agriculture Commissioner, and detailed results testing, the updated bill would still create significant compliance challenges. To that end, the Chamber commits to continued dialogue with Representative Curran, the Senate bill authors, this committee, and other stakeholders who wish to address food safety. Thank you.
Thank you. The next two testifiers are via Zoom. Dr. Michael Hansen, Consumer Reports, Senior Scientist. Welcome.
Welcome, Chair Hansen. My name is Michael Hansen, Senior Scientist at Consumer Reports. We're an independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works with consumers to create a fair and just marketplace. We have 6 million members across the U.S. and 46,882 members in Minnesota. We would like to strongly support HF 44. Orthophthalates are chemicals added to plastic to make it more flexible and durable. But these chemicals don't just stay in the plastic. They can leach out and get into our food and drink. Orthophthalates, have you heard, can not only enter through packaging, but also throughout the entire food chain via exposure from plastic and tubing, conveyor belts, and vinyl gloves, or from meat and produce that has contaminated soil or water. Growing research has shown that our orthophthalates are endocrine disruptors and therefore can interfere with the production of various hormones. Even very small changes in hormone levels can lead to increased risk of diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, and other health impacts. Given the increased concerns over health effects of orthophthalates and the fact that 8 orthophthalates were banned for use in children's toys due to health concerns, Consumer Reports conducted a study of phthalate levels in packaged foods, which was published in January of 2024. We tested samples of 85 different foods for 10 different phthalates, and it was a whole range of foods. We found orthophthalates in 84 of the 85 items we tested, with many of the products having levels above which research has linked to health problems. Given the potential health problems associated with the consumption of orthophthalates and our own findings, we strongly support HF 44, which would require the companies to test packaged foods for orthophthalates and post those results to their websites so they are available to consumers. By posting levels of orthophthalates in their food products, consumers can use this information to make more informed choices about the packaged foods they consume, which would encourage companies to reduce phthalate levels. Consumer Reports urges the committee to approve this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Dr. Zeke McKinney. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you to the Agricultural Finance and Policy Committee for having me here today. My name is Zeke McKinney, and I'm an occupational and environmental medicine physician at Health Partners and affiliate assistant professor at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. My specialty of occupational environmental medicine is all about environmental hazards, and my clinical practice focuses on environmental exposures in all kinds of settings. I'm here today to support HF 44, requiring the testing of phthalates in packaged foods in Minnesota. Because of their prolific use in plastic manufacturing and the wide-ranging use of plastics, phthalates are more or less ubiquitous in the environment, in animals, and most notably in human beings. Evidence of this fact has been demonstrated continually in studies looking at these chemicals in blood, urine, amniotic fluid, semen, and breast milk. Even though phthalates will leave our bodies generally in less than 24 hours without further exposure, the fact that these compounds continue to be found in human studies suggests that our exposures are continuous. Research has shown very strong associations between phthalate exposures and human health outcomes, including reproductive hazards such as sperm quality and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. Additional associations have been made between phthalate exposures and heart disease, diabetes, lung cancer, and kidney disease. More broadly, phthalates cause changes in various hormone systems, what people have referred to as endocrine disruptor chemicals, because these chemicals are very similar to the shape of human hormones, so they interact with systems in our bodies. These chemicals can also cause changes in activation or inactivations of our genes, which both of which can lead to cancer as well. So as with most human health hazards, children are really the ones at the most risk, with the various systems affected still developing in their bodies. For this reason, we must protect Minnesotans from some of the direct exposures we have to phthalates, including removing them from our food sources. And this bill to support just testing for these compounds, already known to be present in many of our foods, is really only the first step in that process. Therefore, I ask your support of HF 44 to require testing of phthalates in packaged foods in Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Yes, there's. Come forward, please. Welcome. Yeah, you need to please sit and then introduce yourself for the record.
Okay. Hello, my name is Karen Lundy. I've got a PhD in biology from the University of California, San Diego. I did happen to go to the medical school for 3.5 years at the University of Iowa. They threw me out. We sued for sexual discrimination, and the judges went to the University of Iowa too, so no way. But anyway, here I am, and I'm here because phthalates don't belong in babies, right? The best lady up here was saying, oh, would you give your child some plastic to eat? No, you wouldn't, right? We're finding plastics in every part of this earth, from the deepest ocean to the tallest mountain. The last thing we need is more plastic in our bodies. So the first step is to report. Where is the plastics in the packaging? We can't ban it until we know where it is. Okay, so this is a very easy peasy thing. We test the food, whatever it is, we find out where the phthalates is, and we report it. We can do this. This is the state of Minnesota. We're still just a bit blue here. It's a wonderful place. Thank you so much. Oh yeah, I founded Fair Trade Minneapolis. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, a fair trade town in the eyes of Fair Trade USA. One of over 2,000 other fair trade towns on earth, with only about 50 in the United States. Thanks again.
See here, fair trade. You make international impact with my fair
trade. We need to keep our testimony to the bill at hand. Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Anyone else? Representative Curran, any comments or members have any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, your bill takes effect in about a little over a year, July of next year. Any idea, have you discussed with manufacturers how long it may take them to upgrade their packaging and get in compliance with this legislation?
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Co-Chair, for the question. So the intent of the bill, and I want to preface by saying this bill is still in the works. We had more amendments that we intended to make prior to the committee today, but simply didn't make the deadline. And I've also had conversations with the chamber and continuing conversations with AgriGrowth, as we understand there are a lot of concerns with this bill. And rightfully so, this is a change. And I wanna make sure that whatever we do, we get it right. So I would say first to your question, if the implementation date is too soon, I am absolutely amenable to changing that implementation date. I would also say that what we're looking for just right now at this time is testing products and having results available to the public. So we're not asking for new packaging immediately. We're not trying to require new packaging immediately. The main goal, if we could just get the bare bones of this bill, which is what I'm completely happy with doing, is getting the information, having products tested, and making that information available to the public. That's at its core what we're looking to do.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Somebody had just put out a text message that, and I'm not real techie, but I got to it. It says there's health apps out today that you can hit a button, click up, and it brings up a product. It gives you a ranking of every ingredient in the product, and then gives a health score. Would that be sufficient, do you think, when we're talking about this certain chemical in foods, processed foods?
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you again, Chair, for the question. So I'm not aware of what the regulations are, or you know, sort of how that data is gathered, and what sort of how that is sourced and then made available to the public. Certainly open to conversation. Of course, I don't want to be duplicative in things that are happening out there. Just trying to make sure that the state of Minnesota is taking a little bit of interest and responsibility in making sure that consumers have information. So if there are existing applications out there that Minnesota could use to our benefit to help aid in this process, I'm certainly open to that.
Representative Burko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Curran, thank you. I don't think anybody wants to poison anybody. So I do see the point of the bill, and I see what you're getting at. I do think there's federal things going on. Right now. This is really an FDA issue to me. And I worry about what happens on the local level, especially to our smaller producers. But you kind of answered part of my question through Chair Anderson's question. I was just curious, so you come back with a positive test. This gets reported to MD. Besides gathering the information, I mean, what's supposed to happen here? I mean, what's the end game?
Representative Curran.
Thank you. And thank you for the question, Representative Burkle. Like I said, the initial bill, I think, was a Cadillac of if supporters of this bill could get every single thing that they were looking for, then, yeah, I think there are folks on the side of who we would want testing. We would want reliable levels or values to look at. And if products met that value or exceeded, that we would be requiring some change. That would make products healthier for consumers. That would be, I think, in the future, sort of an end goal. But at this point in time, what we're really, really trying to get at is informational, just because we know that there is a health risk, and we also know that it's not fully communicated to consumers. And so that is my goal this year, this biennium even, is just to get consumers educated about what's out there, certainly not to be punitive to any producers or manufacturers. And I would certainly hope as well that as producers and manufacturers learn more about some chemicals that might be in their products that they weren't aware of, that they'd probably want to make some changes too. And so we want to be helpful in that process and give people time. We're not looking to try to shut down corporations or small businesses with a bill like this.
Representative Burko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I realize you're not trying to be punitive, and I agree with the concept you're trying to get to. But I think the end game, really, I know you're not, you won't, to be honest, you won't shut down corporations doing this, right? And I think the problem I see with it, it's your small mom and pops, right? It's your cottage food industries. It's your Girl Scout cookies. It's things like that. Those are the folks that are going to have to absorb this cost. But I see the motive. I understand what you're trying to get at. I just worry that we're duplicating things that on the federal level is already happening, and I worry about the cost. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you again for that perspective. And I think your questions and comments paired with Chair Anderson's comments are certainly meaningful to this discussion, in that if there is work, like I said, that's being done that is duplicative, if we can find a way to rely on work that's already been done so that, like you said, the small mom and pops don't have to incur a cost, if somebody else already went through a testing process that is reliable, that the state of Minnesota would recognize as appropriate or following regulation, I would absolutely be open to them using a result that's already available that they wouldn't have to pay for.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and Representative Curran. And I see in the amendment here on line 1.9, you know, it's demonstrating that there's basically some showing the level of what they are, you know, micrograms per kilogram. And, you know, we know that there's not a safe level of these, but there was, you know, and the scientists talked about, you know, a harmful level, and so we need to be under that. Do you know what you're kind of looking for as far as what, you know, an area of what level these are aimed to be at, or?
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. Nelson, for the question. We're still having this conversation. And like I said, this is we're introducing a new idea on a concept that's not new to us, right? Looking at chemicals that leach into our products that have an effect on our health. Recognizing that this is a newer area, I'm not committed to a certain value at this point. We're looking to the experts to sort of determine that as we move forward. And really just, like I said, at the core, just gathering that data of what are the values and making that known, and then continuing to work on if we need to establish where that line might be.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and Representative Curran. One of the things that I, you know, looking at this, you know, I agree. I think the what we're trying to do is good. We're trying to remove, you know, carcinogens and things like that out of our food system and everything. And I think ultimately we want to remove it out of anything we're in contact with. And I think that's good. My concern is, you know, when we're going after food brands, when it really probably needs to be more geared towards the packaging provider itself and not the food brand, you know, I think you're putting the liability in the wrong area instead of with the brand. That's just my opinion and my two cents for what it's worth.
Representative Curran.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I agree with you. And in my notes, too, I'm trying to be mindful about talking about manufacturers versus packaging and packagers, because you're right. Excuse me. The primary issue here is with packaging. And so, as we move forward, there's still a liability on the part of a manufacturer or somebody who chooses to use certain packaging if they're aware of information, right? But also, that's a conversation that we're going to have in the packaging industry as well. So I appreciate that you're making the distinction, and I'm trying to be very mindful of that distinction as well.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Thank you, Representative Curran. This sounds like a really cool idea. I agree with a lot of the testifiers have said that, you know, plastics in our food is really harmful and all the downstream harms and effects that can come from it. If I did have a question about this bill, as I understand you're continuing to work on it, kind of similar to Representative Nelson's, but I wonder if there's also a way to sort of get at further upstream in the packaging cycle, right? So I imagine especially a lot of these smaller mom and pop shops, they probably only have one or two places to go. But is there a way maybe to bring those folks into this legislation that they're also responsible for informing their retail consumers what their packaging is made out of, and then those folks can then decide if they want to buy from them or not? As another way also of just kind of getting further upstream to be able to minimize the use of plastics. I mean, I think part of it is, you know, with the concern for the small businesses, right, you know, they probably only have a couple places to shop, but maybe if we gave them more information, they would choose other organizations or other companies to shop from for their packaging. So just something to think about. But I think overall, the purpose of this bill is timely. It's definitely something that we need, and particularly as we are going through changes at our federal administration and the FDA already doesn't have the strongest track record in tracking things, I think it's appropriate for states to be able to do what they can in the space they're given within the federal law. So thank you.
Curran.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Agbaje, for those comments. And I agree. I think there's a couple different ways that we're looking at this in this conversation. One is, what are the levels in the packaging itself as it comes to a producer, manufacturer to then, hold food, right? The greater concern is, what are the levels in the product that's being consumed? Obviously, those two ideas are related, but they're not exactly the same, right? And so I think it is important in this conversation for context that, yes, we are looking upstream and giving people the information of which packaging they're going to choose for their products. But most importantly for the immediate is, let's take a look at the food that's in that packaging right now and get an idea of what we're consuming right now.
Representative Agbaje.
Nothing further, Chair.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Anderson, I think I would really appreciate, you know, you mentioning having that app, if you could share that with the committee, what you're referring to earlier. And then probably not to Representative Curran, but to maybe the Pollution Control Agency, Mr. Chair. I see that they are in the room. And so one of the earlier testifiers mentioned some of the rulemaking that's going on at the federal level right now with regards to the US EPA under President Biden, President Obama, President Trump now. And I just saw something concerning that came through, that the federal EPA is planning to cut roughly 50 to 75% of their staff at the Office of Research and Development. So I want to ask the NPCA, who is, you know, charged with regulating toxins in the state of Minnesota, do you have an idea of the timeline for this rulemaking that was mentioned earlier in the testimony? And, you know, do we know when the federal government is going to, you know, go through and either approve that or not? Thank you.
Welcome. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Tom Johnson, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, I do not have the answer to your question. Happy to follow up with the committee. You know, I know that there's some uncertainty as to some of the rules that were proposed under the Biden administration and now are being reconsidered under the Trump administration, and so I'll have to get back to the committee on where those are at or if we know where they're at.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Johnson, for that. I really appreciate the follow-up to the committee. I think, you know, Mr. Chair, just the larger point, it's really concerning that, you know, we're hearing testimony in committee around, you know, waiting for the federal government, when the federal government is cutting staff who actually is in charge of doing the work to protect all, you know, Minnesotans and, you know, the whole entire country. And so I think that this is really critical if they're going to, you know, refer this to the bill that's at hand. And so thank you, and I look forward to the follow-up.
Thank you.
Representative Curran, any comments to that? Representative Anderson.
Thanks again for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. Was wondering, I have a question and a follow-up and a comment, if there is any acceptable level of this chemical in food. And I would just caution all of us to keep that in mind. I think one of the earlier testifiers was mentioning Cheerios, and if I heard correctly, she said it was full of chemicals. That doesn't sound real appetizing, and in whatever the definition is of full of something, it would indicate to me that there's a lot of it, and I would doubt that in, you know, packaged cereal like that. And this last comment, Mr. Chair and members, my wife does a lot of baking, and she likes to, on occasion, grind her own wheat and make flour. But she texted and said that according to the FDA, the acceptable level of insect parts in 1/3 cup of flour is 75. I'll leave it at that.
Representative Curran. On that, or, you know.
Chair Anderson, gross. That's gross. Yeah.
She makes good bread, though.
Is there anyone else with any questions before we go to closing comments? Representative Curran.
Thank you again, Chair Hansen and Chair Anderson. I'll just close with this. House File 44, like I've said, it's certainly not meant to be a hammer or a thorn in anybody's side. It's not meant to shame or penalize any company that might have orthophthalates in their products currently. Our goal is to ensure that consumers have the information available. We already have information that shows that orthophthalates are a health risk. And so I think it's important that the state of Minnesota address a health risk that we're aware of. And I think at a very basic level, we can start by just testing products to see what is in them, and, you know, then continue to work on any sort of, you know, if we do have to have a mandate, if it gets that serious. But I think, you know, the hope is that as we do this testing and as producers, manufacturers, packagers find out what their products contain, that they might just choose to make decisions to change their products as they're able, so that we're not finding these harmful chemicals in our products. I want this to be the least burdensome as possible, and completely understand all of the concerns that we've had with the language. Again, very, very open to continuing conversations to make this as workable as possible. And I just wanted to note, too, on some of the federal regulations. I appreciate Chair Lee's comments there. I'll say I came into a similar challenge with blood lead levels in last biennium. And, you know, federal government is going to federal government, right? And we don't know how long those processes take. And sometimes the standards are going to be different from the standards that we have here in the state of Minnesota. So I'm usually on Team Minnesota, do what you got to do. And federal government, if they align, they align. If they don't, they don't. But I think it's our duty to make sure that our consumers are protected.
I renew my motion that House File 44, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you. Next up, House File 2102, Representative Lee, Local Food Purchasing Assistance Program funding provided and money appropriated. We have about 20 minutes for this. Representative Lee, would you like to move that House File 2102 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my motion.
And I believe you have an A1 author's amendment. Would you like to move your amendment and explain it briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendments. And so the A1 amendments just make clear that this bill is to help people to purchase and distribute food at no cost to Minnesotans who are experiencing food insecurity, also to prioritize grantees to those that grants to those that have demonstrated strong connections to individuals who are facing food insecurity, and also to allow for up to 15% of the grant to be used for administrative or transportation expenses.
Representative Lee moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The A1 is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 2102 as amended, which will establish a state local food purchasing assistance, or the LFPA program. In short, with the amendment, this bill establish a program that provides grants to purchase and distribute food at no cost to Minnesotans experiencing food insecurity. I believe that this is a win-win for the state of Minnesota to support new farmers with guaranteed contracts, and also help ensure that people experiencing hunger get the food that they need. Two reasons why, you know, I'm supportive of this when the Minnesota Farmers Union brought this forward was to really, look at some of the, destruction that we are seeing from the federal government with regards to the cuts to farmers in the state of Minnesota. This is a program we're creating to replicate what we have from funding from the federal government. And then also to just really focus on helping out new farmers and folks who really needs the food in the state of Minnesota. And so I believe that they have some of my testifier who will be coming forth, you know, next will be able to share some of their stories with this. And I think that this is something that we definitely need to carry on at the state should the federal government go through with not providing any more funding for this program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. First up, we have Jane Winsberger, Minnesota Farmers Union. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Chair Anson, and members of the committee. For the record, my name's Jane Winsberger. I'm a farmer from Ogilvie, Kennebec County. I have a farm named after my five children, GDEF, and I'm so proud to be a farmer in Minnesota. I am proud to share my support for 2102. Along with that of Minnesota Farmers Union. I want to thank you, Rep. Lee, for your leadership on this proposal. For sure, we are farmers, and we need you as a house to help us. So as a farmer, the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program has been a huge help in building my business. I'm talking on my behalf and others out there, and my farming experience here in Minnesota. I can say a little bit about me. I came from Kenya in 1999. I started professionally, I'm a nurse, I'm an RN, but I decided to go to the food industry because that is where our energy comes from. So I started with a quarter an acre in Cambridge in 2019, and I didn't have no market. I grew the food, and the food went to a waste, so most of them died. But I didn't give up. In 2020, I got a contract from Goodacre. I started supplying the program called LEAVE. And in 20, yeah, this enables me to think now I'm a farmer. I can produce. So I increased my production to a half an acre, an hour an acre. In 2021, I was able to buy or to purchase a farm in Ogilvy, which was 3.88 acres, and continue farming there. I was able to supply this food to the community, fresh food, because I'm an organic farmer. This year, I'm so proud of a farmer telling you that I've increased from a quarter an acre, I got a 30-acre land. That is where I'm going to farm. And when I was purchasing the seeds, I put on hold and say, I don't want to do this because there was a frost. So then where am I going to take all this food I'm so excited about increasing and increasing up to these acres? So as someone who is working to build my farm business, I know how to grow things now. I can say that. But the continual challenges has been finding consistent markets. That is the problem we have all farmers. With a reliable market, or even better, contract, I can lock in my seeds and other inputs, plan my crop rotations, and otherwise maximize my production. But without that, I could wind up growing things that no one wants to purchase. That's the big reason that the local food purchase funds have been so important to us. They give us certainty. But of course, that certainty was called into question, as I said, but I'm so happy I was told this morning that we can just grow. I was frustrated, of course, but now I am happy, and I don't know how long it's going to stay. Now they are freed, but I run the program, won't continue beyond. That's what I was told. This current funding. So I appreciate that you considering stepping in to fill that gap for the farmers out here who are struggling with the markets. To close, I say that I am proud my farm is going to, my food is going to the people who would need it. And I am grateful that for the support in the building my farm also you're giving us. Thank you for considering this investment. And I would be happy to answer any question if you have it. Because I'm a farmer, I told you I've grown to where I am right now. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we'll do questions at the end of testimony. Arlene Jones, Sprout Food Hub via Zoom.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2102, to create a state local food purchase assistance grant. Again, for the record, my name is Arlene Jones, and I am the executive director of Sprout Food Hub located in Little Falls. I am also a small family farm and farm south of Brainerd. Sprout's mission is to work with small family farms to provide reliable market opportunities for local foods in central rural Minnesota. Sprout has been the gracious recipient of two local food purchasing assistance funding opportunities. We have worked with food shelves in Todd, Morrison, Cass, and Crow Wing counties, providing them not only with local fresh produce, but also other Minnesota-grown things such as grains, beef, pork, turkey, and eggs. Many of these food shelves also serve families from surrounding counties as well. Through these efforts, we have been able to provide financial support to over 100 small family farms with payments totaling over $150,000 through these two rounds. The Local Food Purchasing Assistance Program has allowed Sprout to positively impact well over 2,500 rural Minnesota families to help address food insecurity and by providing hunger relief support through our food shelves. These hunger relief efforts provide greater access to food, financial relief to these families, and community support as well. For our families, it is really important to know that our families, friends, and neighbors, that it oftentimes takes great courage and humility to receive this support. I also want to address the impacts on our small family farms. For the first time, Sprout was able to contract with our small family farms through these grant opportunities, which in turn allowed our farmers to take these contracts and have access to capital to expand and sustain our small family farms and keep our agricultural land in agricultural production. I am here today to humbly ask you to support House File 2012 as we continue to see the value of this program in supporting Minnesota's small family farms, supporting local economies, and most importantly, supporting Minnesota families through hunger relief programs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next up, Amanda Nygon Crowley, the Village Agricultural Cooperative, via Zoom.
Thank you, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to testify in support of HF 2102 to create a state local food purchase assistance grant. For the record, my name is Amanda Nygon Crowley. I'm a fifth generation farmer, a former mental health practitioner, and the co-founder and director of the Village Agricultural Cooperative. We are a nonprofit organization based in Rochester, Minnesota. The Village Ag Co-op was established based on the needs identified by the State of Minnesota Department of Agriculture and our local health public agencies. These needs include an increase in local specialty crop production, stronger food supply chains, community integration, increased food security for low-income households, and the need for more farmers to enter a workforce that is aging out statewide. As an organization, in the last 6 years, we have built six community farms that support more than 250 families across a total of 22 acres, with a focus on supporting new immigrant groups who would not otherwise have access to agricultural land. We were awarded a USDA LFPA contract in the amount of $100,000 in early 2024. We spent over $76,000 of that amount directly on food procurement from our local small farms. This created a significant economic impact for the 14 participating emerging farming families, and it also brought more than 240,000 pounds of produce and high-quality protein to our food insecure communities at eight different locations, eight different food shelves around the city of Rochester. The fresh produce was immediately utilized by our communities, and we experienced record-breaking food shelf utilization in 2024. Additionally, this funding provided culturally specific crops that our community cannot access anywhere else. By continuing to fund this program, we can provide secure markets and technical support for farmers as they learn the processes of building a farm business. In a high-risk industry such as farming, funding such as proposed Bill HF 212 would greatly support the emerging farmers statewide in Minnesota. Sadly, the Village Ag Co-op, we are still awaiting our reimbursement for our 2024 program expenses, which total more than $82,000. We wait to hear if the USDA portals will open. We are in full support of the state of Minnesota continuing to implement this program in support of our food insecure individuals and emerging farmer groups, and also in support of our small businesses. Thank you for this opportunity, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Commissioner Vabel. I was going to call you up if you weren't going to walk. Welcome. State your name for the record.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Andrea Vabel. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I wanted to first thank Representative Lee for carrying this bill, to Farmers Union, to Jane and Arlene and Amanda for their words today on this important program. While this is not in the governor's budget, we are incredibly grateful for the support of this program. As we've mentioned before in committee, we got news about the 2025 cooperative agreements that were terminated by USDA, and we see great value in the program that we've set up through through LFPA the last couple of years. And a state-level LFPA is something we've been thinking about for a couple of years, so now seems like a great time to have that conversation, and we really appreciate the consideration of the committee to talk this through and help us come up with something that could really do some great good work around the state. Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. The, of course, you know, we are a small but mighty team, so we've got a good process in place, and depending upon how we built out the state-level program and, of course, the administration that it was allowed, but we were expecting about $4.7 million coming in fiscal year 25, so that was what we were planning for, but, of course, recognizing the many priorities you all have to balance, I can't say an exact number.
And Commissioner Vaubel, just maybe around an estimate of how many farms that would help. Doesn't have to be exact, or if you don't want to ballpark, that's okay too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd have to, it's hard to say. Right now we expect, or with the current funding that we had through LFPA and LFPA Plus, we helped, I think it was about 180 farms, but we think that's an underestimate just because there's a lot of folks that aggregate through several other farms, so we think it would be beyond that, so it kind of depends on how we would set up the program for 25, but it would be a significant impact as mentioned by the testifiers.
Members, any questions? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee. Just to underscore, I think this is a great bill. From my comments a couple weeks ago, the committee knows I think food insecurity is within the responsibility of this committee in many ways, and this is a great bill to do that, and especially at a time just to underscore the need when these programs are being cut at the federal level that we need to step in at the state level. And to underscore the testifier from my area of the state saying they have $82,000 that has not been reimbursed from the feds through this program. These sort of programs become even more dire. So thank you, Rep. Lee. Happy to support the bill.
Representative Lee. That was closing comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members for this discussion, and look forward to seeing what we can do to help our food insecure neighbors and also the farmers in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 2102 as amended be re-referred, laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, House File 2279, Representative Vang, Office of Broadband Development renamed to Office of Broadband Development and Digital Equity. We estimate about 15 minutes. As Representative Vang is getting ready, I think it's important to note that each member has different ways of how they draft legislation. Some members come in and say, I have a perfect bill, or it's as good as it can get, and we'd like you to adopt it and not amend anything. Other members may come and build the bill in committee, that they take testimony and hear the input from people, and maybe they pass it to another committee and they get testimony and move to another committee. I think in some bills it's as many as 9 or 10 committees getting input from the public and other members and modify and adapt the bill. And the Senate may do the same thing. So that is a process that we go through, and that's what we're seeing here with authors' amendments and changes that are proposed because input is already received. So with that, Representative Vang, would you like to move that House File 2279 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
Yes, so moved. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Vang, I believe you have two authors' amendments. Would you like to move the A1 amendment first and explain it briefly?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment is a technical amendment. It was identified by nonpartisan staff, and so I hope that committees will accept the amendment.
Representative Vang moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Vang, you also have the A2 author's amendment. Would you like to move the A2 amendment and explain it briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A2 amendment. This amendment is also technical to us. Well, it's just aligning, changing the name digital equity to digital opportunity, aligning federal language to ensure that there's alignment on that, and then it deletes language, policy language to establish a new grant program, which we, this bill doesn't have any funding, and so it deletes that new grant program establishment policy language. And I hope the committee will accept it.
Are there any questions on the A2 amendment? Representative Vang moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Vang, to the bill as amended.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the state and federal government are investing hundreds of millions of dollars into broadband infrastructure systems in Minnesota. High-speed internet access is no longer a luxury. It is a necessity for homeowners and businesses. The majority of these resources are being allocated into parts of the state where it is harder and more expensive to run fiber or cables to homes and businesses, namely in rural areas. I believe that is an important investment for our outstate areas and the people who live there. However, it is often overlooked that there are also large pockets of more developed areas that are also unserved and underserved, either due to lack of infrastructure or due to affordability reasons. For instance, in my county, in Hennepin County, approximately 25% of households now have access to quality, affordable, high-speed internet service. Some of the most underserved areas are in the western, more rural part of the county, where it is difficult to obtain rights of way to bury. Fiber optic lines and ISPs do not have good coverage with cell service or 5G Wi-Fi. Conversely, many multifamily housing units in urban areas do not have apartments wired for cable or satellite hookups, and when they do, it is cost prohibitive for many residents. And so this bill seeks to address some of the concerns and reflects the expanded mission of deprogramming. It renames the Office of Broadband to include Digital Opportunity, which reflects a broader focus and brings it into line with the plans the federal government has approved for the Department of the Department Digital Opportunity Plan. And the bill makes other slight programmatic changes to expand the responsibility of the Office of Broadband. It modifies state goals to include not just access, but also broadband adoption and affordability, update grants criteria to ensure funding is directed towards unserved and underserved areas in both rural and low-income urban communities, requires an annual report on progress being made, and updates some terminology to provide clarity on how resources are being deployed. These changes will result in better high-speed internet access, broadband adoption, affordability across this entire state. And with me today is my testifier, Mika, to highlight the need for this legislation. And thank you, and I ask for your support.
Mika Baer, Hennepin County Office of Broadband and Digital Inclusion. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hansen and members of the committee, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. With me also is Phil Essington, Hennepin County's Director of Broadband and Digital Inclusion, for any technical questions. My name is Mika Baer, and I'm a lifelong resident of Minnesota. I was born and raised on a dairy farm in Winona County and now live in the city of Minneapolis. I'm here to speak in strong support of House File 2279. This is about making sure that every Minnesotan, regardless of where they live, has the resources that they need to succeed. My parents, who are dairy farmers, face significant obstacles in keeping up with modern agricultural practices due to the lack of high-speed internet. As a student, I struggled with limited internet access, making it difficult to connect with teachers and classmates and to fully participate in the educational opportunities that other students in urban areas had. When broadband finally came to our area, it didn't just make things easier, it changed everything. It gave me the chance to pursue an education that I wouldn't have had without it. I took online courses and was able to engage with resources that were previously out of reach. Broadband gave me the opportunity to become the first person in my family to earn a college degree and then a graduate degree while being able to continue participating in my family's homestead. Broadband allowed my parents to integrate technology into their farming operations, improving efficiency and sustainability. Modern dairy farming relies on digital tools for everything from herd health monitoring to climate forecasting. Reliable broadband internet was as vital for my parents to manage their farm operations more effectively, keeping their small family farm competitive and viable. I now live in Minneapolis, where high-speed internet is often assumed to be a given, but the reality is that many residents still struggle with access, whether due to affordability, outdated infrastructure, or the lack of digital skills. As of just a few years ago, as much as 25% of Hennepin County households did not have access to high-speed internet. I've seen my neighbors struggle to apply for jobs online, parents parking outside of libraries to get their kids connected to Wi-Fi for homework, and small business owners lose out on opportunities because their internet service was unreliable or too expensive. Broadband is essential in my own work and engagement in public life, and I need a reliable connection to attend virtual meetings, research policy, and to engage with community partners. It's what keeps Hennepin County running, from public health services to access to telehealth to workforce development programs. And without it, we risk leaving people behind and widening economic disparities, making it harder for our communities to compete in a modern economy. The DEED Digital Opportunity Plan focuses on broadband connections for veterans, people living in rural areas, people with disabilities, have language barriers, people of color, older adults, and people of low incomes or those who have completed a term of incarceration. This bill more closely aligns DEED's OBD with that plan. This is important because we need to build more broadband, and we need to ensure that Minnesotans get connected to broadband and get connected on a real computer, not just complete tasks on a smartphone. Lastly, the bill requires an updated annual report provided to this committee that includes the progress made on these goals. There are no financial obligations as part of this bill. It merely codifies the state's published goals as we look to our friends at DEED to continue their good work building broadband and creating digital opportunity for all Americans. Thank you for your time and consideration in support of this bill.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here to testify before, for, or against the bill? Any questions from members on the bill? Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Vang. I'm curious. I totally understand the idea of making sure everybody has broadband. But are there other forms of internet access that might be more well served to, rather than fiber? I'm just wondering if there's another way to do this that you have thought of, maybe.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I might have another testifier named Phil who might be able to provide more of the technical.
Thank you.
Please come forward. And state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair, committee members. I'm Phil Essington. I'm the director of the Hennepin County Department of Broadband and Digital Inclusion. Thank you for the question. I agree. I think there are a lot of different technologies available, and this is a very quickly changing and evolving landscape where what may work today is fiber, and in the future may be others. I think you may be referring to low Earth orbit technologies, and those are certainly in play for certain residents too.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only reason I bring that up is because I live in such a rural district. That last mile of fiber, you know, a lot of people have a mile-long driveway where I live, and getting that, you're not really served if it runs by your driveway and you're a mile away. And so I'm just curious if there's been conversations about that, just in the big picture about maybe accessing another way. It's just relevant to where I live, too.
To the testifier.
Absolutely, Chair and Representative. I think, I guess a couple of thoughts. We support the bill because we think that drilling fiber isn't enough for getting all Minnesotans connected. And as diverse a state as we have, there will be different options that suit different folks. And so it's not a build it and they will come situation, to your point about building fiber down the street, not necessarily helping a house that's a long way from the street. As we see the bill, you know, it's intended to have outreach and support and training to help folks adopt internet, whatever that technology may be.
Representative Nelson and then Representative McGander.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and Representative Vang. You know, as I'm looking through this, you know, I see on lines 3.27, you know, before that, you know, we're looking at broadband adoption, and I think that was, you know, the kind of the goal of the broadband, you know, what the whole department is. And but, you know, I see the, you know, computer access and things like that, and it's kind of greatly expanding outside of what I think broadband deployment is. And I'm just wondering if we could hear, I see a Ms. Mackey is here, and if we could get a comment on, or, you know, what are the thoughts on, because I think the goals of, you know, developing broadband, you know, when you start adding computer access and digital skills, I think you're greatly expanding the scope of really what that is. And how does that affect federal funding that I've heard may be in question? You know, how does that affect this?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I will defer to Director Mackey to respond.
Ms. Mackey, welcome.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. So I think one thing we should remember is Minnesota is currently part of the Digital Equity Act, which is the $12 million. I think I came and spoke a little bit about this earlier in the session. And so part of that was to create a digital equity plan, which we call Digital Opportunity Plan. And those goals within that are defined within the scope of this bill about adoption, about connecting people to devices, connecting people to information and people to people. So certainly our goal with infrastructure is to get to the end goal of adoption.
Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along the lines of Rep. Burkle's question, you know, if it comes by your door and it's a mile from your home, that's really not a connection. Then my question is, and maybe everyone in the room knows it but me, to folks who have, you know, economic constraints, do we fund their internet service into their home on a monthly basis? Do we cover the monthly service? If so, do we have some kind of minimum level of service that we will provide, some speed of internet service versus, you know, some of the higher tiers of internet? How do we do that? How do we make sure they can afford the monthly fee, and what service do they get for that fee?
Ms. Mackey or Representative Vang.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. So I think, to be clear, our job historically is to be able to get one good provider in every location in Minnesota. That's the infrastructure. We do not currently have a program that helps with the subsidy for low-income households. Now, some providers do offer that. What was out there, especially during COVID, was the Affordable Connectivity Program, which was a federal program that had a subsidy there. During the time that it was used in Minnesota, we had about a third of the residents who were eligible enrolled in that program, and it was about $5 million a month in subsidy that the state did receive through that program. But currently, the state itself does not have a program.
Very good.
Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else with any questions? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Vang, for bringing this forward. Not a question, but a comment. Really appreciate the work that you put into here. And I think, you know, just to this discussion, you know, why we're focusing on broadband is that the state of Minnesota in 2023, I believe, you know, was allocated a little bit north of $650 million for broadband development. So I think that's why the discussion is here, where, you know, we're seeing all this money coming in from the federal government. How are we going to roll it out? And around the piece around, like, the devices and whatnot, you know, I would encourage members, you know, if you go to the Office of Broadband, you know, mapping devices right now, you may look at, you know, the city of Minneapolis, North Minneapolis, where I represent with Representative Bajay, that it seems like we're being served, but we're still having connectivity issues. And so I think that's why we need to broaden this to really look at how do we connect families to devices and to be able to even just operate the internet so that they could, you know, live their life, help them, their kids, you know, with schoolwork, get access to school, healthcare. I think that's one of the big issues for a lot of our community members in urban areas where they don't have transportation options for them to be able to, you know, get their healthcare services. So oftentimes they have to do it virtually. And so I really appreciate you expanding the bill so that we could really have a more in-depth conversation about how do we address the digital need in the state of Minnesota, whether that's, you know, through broadband or through connectivities and the different funding streams that's coming to us through the federal government. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vang. Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. So out in a rural area, speeds are vary greatly. So what kind of speed do you consider to be served, and what speed is considered not served?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Director Maki will have the best answer to this. I think there are some federal guidelines about what is the speed that residents should get.
Director Maki.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the question, Representative. So as statutory goals for 2026 for Minnesota to be eligible for our program and considered served, it's 100 by 20. Unserved is 25 by 3. And so those are the served and unserved threshold. Now, remember, when our grants are awarded to grantees, that has to be scalable. So they have to build 100 by 20 at a minimum, and that has to be scalable.
Representative Jacob.
So is fiber, is that really the only option to provide that? I know in our area, a lot of tower to tower.
Ms. Mackey.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. I am also in your county and also on fixed wireless. So fiber is obviously the most long-term reliable, has the latency and longevity. However, we are technology agnostic. So if a grantee does apply for our program and can meet those speed goals, then they would be eligible for our program. As such, when we're talking about BEAD, we have to get one provider everywhere, so everyone needs to be unserved and underserved served, and that's going to probably take a mix of technologies in order to meet the number that we have that are eligible for BEAD and that we are required to serve in Minnesota.
Vang.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee for your time and for your support for this bill. Thank you.
Representative Vang renews her motion that House File 2279, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Members, before we go to the next two bills, I am going to move a recess for about 10 minutes. I understand the Republican caucus has concerns with amendments to these two bills. So I'm asking to meet with the Republican caucus in the back room there for just a few minutes. I'd like to hear your concerns, each of you. I believe that if we are at 7 and 7, that, and Representative Anderson has stepped out for a bit, if he comes back, we will need one member to step out so we do not have a quorum. But I don't believe this will take very long, and then we can come back if my DFL members can wait for a moment, and then we will come back. So we are in recess.
We're going to reconvene this meeting of the Ag Committee. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members in the committee. What we're going to do is take up House File 2280 first. And this is a bill that has an A1 amendment relating to sewage sludge, and it has the bill has the A1 amendment. I'd like to have both the Department of Ag and the Pollution Control Agency come forward to be prepared to testify on that provision. I would move House File 2280 to be laid over for possible inclusion. And then I would move House File 2280A1 to be brought before the committee.
All right. Representative Hansen moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form that he would like it to be. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Mr. Chair.
Oh.
Point of information.
Absolutely.
Sorry to stop you. Just so I understand correctly, but Representative Hansen moved that 2280 be laid over, and then we're going to discuss the A1 amendment, is my understanding as of right now. Is that correct?
Yes. So this bill is going to be moved over for inclusion, and now we have moved the A1, and we are going to discuss the A1 amendment.
Okay, super. Thank you for that clarification.
And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and Representative Anderson, you were out during we had a discussion, is that laying a bill over does not mean we are going to adopt every word in that bill. And in discussions with the Republican caucus, that this issue relating to sewage sludge is important. It's complicated. Our goal is to lay it over with the A1 amendment so that it can be worked on. As we mentioned, we have nobody on either side here is going to be able to ram anything through. And by laying this over, we continue to have the discussion. We have both agencies plus interests that could be here. This did get introduced as a bill, or it's been put into a hopper. I put this bill as an amendment because I didn't have the jackets yet. And there's been a delay. I think both sides know that there's been a delay in jackets. That bill has been put in the hopper. I'm hoping in the next few days that we can work on solutions on this because it is a complicated issue. In order to do that, I'm asking we can have this discussion to put the A1 on so that it is laid on the table. That does not mean that it'll come out the way it is.
Chair Hanson, would you like to have voting on the amendment before, or would you like to have your testifiers talk on the amendment?
I think Chair Anderson had a question. Oh.
I apologize. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I apologize. I had to go out for a little bit, came back. Is 2280, House File 2280, a department bill, Ms. Vobel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, this is a department policy bill.
Representative Anderson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my concern, and I wasn't part of the discussion here, but I think it's unusual to add an amendment as complicated as this to a bill that is a department bill, which usually is not controversial. And I'm not saying this one is, but it's complicated. And that would be my concern about this. And I would hope, too, that we would just discuss the amendment today, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Vail, Rep. Hanson, would you like to answer?
And thank you, Mr. Chair and Co-Chair Anderson. Following this, 2281 will be moved as a standalone bill without any amendment.
Rep. Hanson? Okay. Rep. Hanson?
Mr. Chair, and so if the issue with the A1 amendment, there is a deletion on 1.11 and 1.12 that relates to an old deadline that expired 11 years ago. So we're striking redundant language. On the delegation of authorities above that, on line 1.5 and 1.6, that provides authority to the commissioner, as we have provided with the pollution or with the pesticide law to cities of the first class that could be delegated. To my knowledge, no city has sought delegation under the pesticide control at this time. The commissioner may review records of sewage sludge transfers on line 2.8, 2.9, 2.10. 2.15 is records retention under 18C. 18C is the fertilizer law, which the jurisdiction is within the Department of Agriculture. And it describes record retention. It has storage, handling, and disposal relating to feed and aquatic life beyond the traditional language that has been there for probably since 1987 or 1989. And then on subdivision 5, fertilizer, rinsate, and container disposal, there's actually an error on my part on line 3.5, open burn of a fertilizer container, not an open burn of fertilizer. Then we go into line 3.10 and 3.11, animal waste and sewage sludge on impervious surface. So, again, the A1 amendment is to attach this to the bill, lay it over. We continue to work on it, and I do have both agencies here who will express their interest and concern relating to this. So I don't know which one would like to go first.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Who would like to go first? Go ahead. State your name for the record.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Tom Johnson with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chair, just speaking to the A1 amendment, the agency is concerned not necessarily on the topic of conversation that's in the bill. We do believe it is an important topic that both this committee and other committees should be having about biosolids, PFAS, as well as manure application. We do feel that most of, if not all of the authorities that are granted to the Department of Agriculture in the amendment here do actually exist for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency under, in the case of sewage sludge, rules 7041. And then in the case of manure application under rules 7020, the feedlot rules. So that is the basis of our concern, not that there is that the committee or the Chair Hansen shouldn't be bringing this forward or anything, but that that these authorities do already exist under rule chapters. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Would you like to proceed?
So much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to echo our sister agency on the regulatory authority for manure and biosolids under PCA. We prefer that remains under their jurisdiction. We do have a few concerns with just some of the delegation. There's some unknowns with EPA and whether or not our delegation under EPA would be honored, also especially with this current EPA. We're also just not clear on the fiscal impact of this for our department either. So we are happy to continue to have the conversation and work with Chair Hansen and others in the committee to have further conversations, but those are our concerns.
Thank you, Commissioner Vabel. We're going to move to member questions on this amendment. I believe Representative Nelson had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Got to think through this here, Chair Smith.
Chair Smith. It's a rare last name. Go ahead.
Thank you for that. And I think this amendment brings up some important topics. And you know, I do share the concern with both departments of or agencies of a little bit of duplicity of some things. But at the same time, it does bring up some important topics. And I think there is regulation already going on. And I think there probably needs to be some more in some areas. But I think also when we look at, many rural homes, we have it's a simple septic system. And, that is often on my farm, we have one. And, it's about every 5 years it's pumped and, the sludge from that is applied to our fields. And I think it's a very different product than I would say a municipal sludge is coming out of any of our larger cities. And I think that really brings up some questions on really treating sludge as sludge. It's all the same thing. And I think it's very different what comes out of the various places. You've got industrial processors running their into the sanitary system, same as household waste. And I think that really brings up a lot of concerns because you've got some different it's a very different product than what comes out of a rural septic tank. And so I definitely have some concerns about the amendment, but at the same time, I think the discussion we're having is important too, because, PFAS is found everywhere. And I think we don't want to contaminate our fields, with the application to a field using it as a fertilizer, because we could inadvertently because it causing a lot of damage with that. So I do thank you for the discussion, but I do have concerns about adding it on to, this bill today.
Rep. Hansen, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Nelson, as I mentioned earlier, I am willing to work with folks on this. I think that we want to make sure we have a public discussion about this and where those jurisdictions need to lie and if there's a way of cleaning up the statute, because we all contribute to this problem no matter where we live. And we're hearing from other states and throughout the country of accumulations that may have a real deleterious impact on farmers, but also consumers. And if we close off the option of land application, then we have to have another, then the Pollution Control Agency is going to have another challenge to deal with. So whether this ends up in this committee for, you know, complete jurisdiction, I want to start that conversation. So I'm asking that we approve the A1 amendment, get it in. We continue to work on it. It is not going to come out the same. We have more to, and I know there are many other, the cities, the counties are going to want to testify, but getting this started, and then hopefully we can get something that everyone can agree on, because that's what we're going to have to do in order to pass anything out of here.
Representative Nelson. Let's move to Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you also, Chair Hansen, for your candid comments back there. It's appreciate to, I appreciate kind of seeing the heart of what's guiding you through this process. I think what we have is some areas that we have to clean up, and you're looking at those and saying, okay, that's going to be costly. It's kind of unfortunate that we're in that predicament. So how do we get ahead of it, right? How do we take some steps now to make sure that we're not building up waste materials in another location that will be a costly cleanup for the generation coming after us? So I honestly do appreciate the effort that you're making here. I am a little concerned about the jurisdictional issues that we're having in our departments, and so maybe a little more methodical front end into this is needed, so that we can get to the end that you want. And I'm all for being on the same team of getting to that end point. It's just a matter of how do we get there that we'll all have to work out. You can sure respond to that, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. Chair Hansen, would you like to respond?
I want to make sure that we're open and trying to get this resolved. You know, if it does need to go into another committee, you know, then we would have the bill on that. But starting this discussion today and then laying the bill over continues that discussion, that when we come back, hopefully we have some solutions. And maybe that's a re-referral of the bill. But I think starting this today, we are in uncertain times. Nobody can do anything on their own. I'm asking for your indulgence here that we try this.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Chair Anderson, if you have a question.
I will try to be quick, Mr. Chair. Thank you. A couple of comments. If this needs to go to another committee because of this amendment, do it as a standalone bill. I don't think we need to tie it up to a Department Ag bill to have it sent to another committee. Couple of quick comments, and I'm glad the PCA guy is still there. Back where I come from, we call animal waste manure. And if I were going down the highway with an open spreader and a piece happened to fall off the back of the spreader and a county sheriff came by, could I be ticketed for that?
Mr. Johnson, I think this question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to follow up with you, Representative Anderson. I think the rules do apply to animal manure application, and there are sections related to impervious services. So I don't know the specific answer, but I'll happy to follow up with you.
Chair Anderson?
Well, it says here in the amendment that it would be illegal, may not apply. And then my last comment, again, about language that gets fine language. If I had a small empty cardboard box in a container that had been holding a jug of fertilizer and that got burnt in the road ditch, is that an adverse effect on the environment? It says so here in this bill, in this amendment. So I have concerns about the amendment, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding we are running out of time, so the second bill would not be heard. I would renew my motion on the A1 amendment to get that the bill in the shape I, as the author, would like.
Chair Anderson, before we move to the bill.
Very quickly, Representative Chair Hansen, could we continue working on this bill without adopting the amendment? I'm concerned about tying this to another department bill in sending it off to another committee. I would ask you if you'd continue to work on it with us before we adopt the amendment.
Chair Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Chair Anderson, you were not in the room where I thought I had an agreement, where we tried to work it out, and I'm hoping that we would do that. I understand you were not in the room. I'm understanding, you know, that you can call for a roll call if you want. I'm asking you, person to person, that we can work together on things. I'm hopeful that we could.
Chair Anderson, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that didn't answer my question either. But if there was an agreement made, I will stand by the agreement. But I do have concerns.
We're nearing the end of our time. Representative Gander, be brief, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did hear testimony after we were back there, and that testimony could also be compelling upon each one of us. I just wanted to register that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did get to be a part of the meeting with Representative Hansen in the back there. And I share the same concerns that Representative Anderson does and brought to several of those up. To my surprise, as we came to the testimony today, I thought I'd hear something different from the testifiers. And the testifiers reiterated what my concerns were with this bill when we were back there in the meeting. And so, one, I thank our testifiers for being here today and testifying, because you just brought a different message that I anticipate I was going to hear. That's all. And so I guess I just say it to reiterate that when I asked my question about when he moved this to lay over, my question is you were separating them in this meeting, and that where this was going to be laid over and then this was going to be a separate document when we initially started out here today. And if that's different than what I understood it to be, I guess that's my interpretation, right? So when I asked my question earlier, it's like, when you moved to lay this over, I assumed, okay, we've dealt with that, we're laying that over, now we're going to deal with the amendment. And maybe I'm interpreting that
So Rep. Lawrence, we're not really able in committee to create a new bill on top of this. So for it to be laid over, the language in the A1, it would have to be a part of the bill. So I think that's what Chair Hansen was trying to get at.
Mr. Chair, thank you for clarifying. I've not been at this a year yet, so.
Any final questions? Chair Hansen, any final comments?
I would ask for a yes vote, and I would commit to work with you. It's not my intention that this bill will look the same.
All right, so Chair Hansen has moved the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form he wants. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those against, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Division having been requested, all those in favor, please raise their hand. That's fine. Let me know when you have a count. We're getting the count. One moment. Please keep your hands up. You can lower your hands. All those opposed, please raise your hands. There being seven ayes and seven nays, the A1 amendment is not adopted. Representative Hansen, to your bill.
I withdraw the bill from consideration.
All right. The bill is withdrawn from consideration. With that, we are adjourned for today.